Welcome back. It's 7 minutes past 11 and coming up weekend sign with Terry Wallace, all thanks to Eco Garage Doors and Martin Blake with all thanks to InSport Promotions. 942-916, taking your calls. It's always your forum to fire up.
In the red corner.
A lot of respect paid to Blake. He marks and what a 50. And now he's head rolling. Can he put it through for a goal? Outside of 50, bangs it on the chest, knocks a fortune, and Wallace's mark.
Let's get ready to rumble!
On Hungry for Sport, it's time to recap the weekend's action with Martin Blake and Terry Wallace. It's the Weekend Siren.
Yes, the Weekend Siren. Good morning, Terry.
How are you going, KB? What a weekend of footy it was. Indigenous round, I thought, was great. We had
A lot of controversy.
But one of the marks of the year, one of the goals of the year. We had two young, fresh sides still just playing absolutely brilliant footy in the Doggies and the Saints. We had that great clash over in Adelaide. I thought it was a brilliant round.
The goal of the year, you're talking about Eddie Betts.
Eddie Betts was brilliant.
Left-footed torpedo from the boundary line.
Only Eddie can do it. he's remarkable. And he's taken his game to another level.
Yeah, so is Josh Kennedy, I reckon, from the West Coast Eagles. He's always been good, but I just think now, at ground level, he's just extraordinary as well.
I'm not sure if we're talking about those two. The Blues fans will want to hear about that because they are sitting number one and number two in the Coleman medal.
Don't tell them that, Terry. 942-916. Martin Blake has joined us as well. G'day, Martin.
Hello, KB. Listen, I want to go for a cup of tea with you straight after the show. We might even take the list manager with us. We're going to work out a way for AFL teams to stop a run on, because if someone can work that out, it used to be you just flood the back line. That's been for 100 years. What do we do now? Because if we can work that out, I saw two games on the weekend, particularly the Collingwood North Melbourne game. If you could find a way to stop the opposition from scoring a run of goals.
That's a worry, North Melbourne, because, Terry, this has happened to North Melbourne before. I watched that game, and I thought in the first half, this North Melbourne side's capable of beating any side in the competition. They were absolutely fantastic. They just blew Collingwood off the park. And then all of a sudden, they lost it. Yeah, they couldn't win any centre clearances. They couldn't win around the ball. Their kicking became atrocious. Their decision-making became atrocious. As Collingwood kicked a goal, they got a bit of confidence, then kicked another goal, got more confident. The crowd got involved. In the end, I mean, North Melbourne actually did well to probably get themselves back into the game, because it looked like they were completely gone, got themselves back into the game and then let it go again.
Well, it's flip-sided. I mean, let's have a look at the two clubs. I'll look at Collingwood first. I think of all the clubs that I see in the competition, when Collingwood's pressure indexes are right, when they're really playing a hunt and chase game, that's absolutely when they play their best footy. And I thought they were pretty devoid of that in the first
half.
Couldn't
get the ball off. North were fantastic.
Yeah, but if you have
speed,
a look,
the movement of the ball.
If you have a look at the lack of hunting and the lack of pressure that was there from Collingwood early, I think they would have been pretty disappointed themselves about that. And I've seen.
So you're saying as soon as the pressure came on North Melbourne, they just wilted?
They didn't handle it. Yeah, they didn't handle it at all. And I'm interested in one other thing, and I'd like to. We've got a quote coming up here from Brad Scott, just what he spoke about after the game, about it not being to do with some of their, necessarily their tactics.
There's absolutely no problem with system or structure in the second half. The leadership's standing up at the moment when you need to win the ball, when you need to play to the way we want to play, and we didn't. So, I thought of our designated leaders who are out in the ground, who largely did that for most part of the game, but we've got too many passengers who just don't toe the line.
So he's saying structurally there's nothing wrong with the North Melbourne game or setup.
Well, first
you,
up...
You don't agree with that?
No, I don't. First up, I understand exactly what he's saying in relation to, look, when the pressure come on, and I was just saying that myself, when the pressure come on, I didn't think the North Melbourne players handled it very well at all. But Collingwood still only went inside forward 50 in the third quarter on 14 occasions. Now, we've come in here when there's been games outrageous, when Hawthorn played Port Adelaide and it was 27 or whatever it was. So 14 is not an outrageous quarter of football.
It's probably a fraction above average.
Correct.
Yeah.
9 goals, 2, so 11 scores from 14 entries. Mm. That says something has broken down. You spoke about run-ons, Martin. Mm. We've spoken about North Melbourne and their run-ons. I think for 3 years, everyone's spoken about they can't halt a run-on going against them at any stage. They actually identified that themselves, and they went and got Lee Tudor as a coach who's absolutely outstanding, from a defensive structure point of view. He's been at Geelong with their success. He's been at Sydney with their success, St Kilda in between when they were playing off in grand finals. So he was brought to the club because they have an issue in that area. Well, to me, when you get scored upon 11 times and 9 of them are goals from 14 entries, you've still got an issue.
The North are actually 14th in defence, guys. So, that you know, I reckon that Brad Scott worked very hard on this, and you mentioned Lee Tudor. They got up to 5th on the defensive list last year, but they're 14th this year. So, Terry, what do you do when a team gets a run on? Because you could tell in the first 5 minutes of that third quarter yesterday, Pendlebury was lifting, Swan was lifting, Jamie Elliott was available. What do you do? Because in the old days, KB, obviously put numbers back, but now if you put
numbers back
you're
moment.
Freeing up someone at the other end of the ground. So
they have
if
to put them back, they're already there.
So what do you do? We can't have a timeout like in basketball. What do we do?
Well, normally the best way is to get more numbers around the football.
At the contest.
Yeah, at the contest, rather than necessarily having them back, because you're absolutely right. I mean, the more you put them back, and this was the game that we spoke about a few weeks ago when it was Port Adelaide trying to hold on against Hawthorn. Mm. They put so many back that Hawthorn just pushed all their blokes up the ground and just squeezed the life out of Port Adelaide and just
played in their Port 50.
Well, virtually, yeah. Played in 70 metres of the ground, and it was just a matter of whether Port Adelaide could hang on. So you would guarantee if you play that style of footy, you're going to get high 20s against you in inside 50. So that doesn't work. It's more creating numbers at the contest. But, geez, they were just belted.
Let's take your calls. So Daryl joins us on the road. G'day, Daryl.
Look, I'm really perplexed. You know, Goldstein dominated yesterday, and I've seen North a few times, and we get killed at the stoppages. And when you look at the players that are on ball, Cunnington's a competitive beast. Siebel's a competitive beast. I don't understand how we're getting killed at stoppages.
I'll ask you one, Daryl. Do you think you get beaten at the absolute inside first use, or do you think you get beaten on just that spread? Because I'm inclined to think that it's a little bit more spread.
It is true on the spread, but we're not getting our hands. When we're getting our hands first, something's happening. We seem to lack systems at stoppages, and I don't think it's the personnel. Because if Goldstein wasn't dominating, I'd say okay. But we've got first use of the ball, and they're killing us.
It was 33-22 yesterday, Daryl, in Collingwood's favour at stoppages, 14-15 at the centre bounces. I think generally, Terry, North Melbourne are okay in close. I don't see it as an issue for them
at
all.
But what we talk about around a stoppage is an inner ring and an outer ring. And I think North are very good in the inner ring. So that is that ability to crash in hard, first hands on the ball. But the outer ring is if it just spills marginally from... Yeah, really in tight, I don't think that they're quite as fleet of foot. No Wells, no Del Sando.
Ideally, you have Wells and Del Sando out there.
And no Swallow yesterday
as well. Which means Zeebald or Bastanac digs it out to Wells and away you go.
Dennis has joined us from Oakley. He wants to talk about a Collingwood player. G'day, Dennis.
Yeah, good morning, Kevin. Morning, boys.
Good morning.
On Saturday, I went out to Coburg to have a look at the Coburg Piranhas play the Collingwood Reserves. And specifically, I wanted to see how Ben Reed was. It was his first game back. He was good. He was very, very good. He was doing all those things you hoped that he could do. That is, sprint at full pace. You turned your eyes away. You thought, don't do that. You'll break down. Just don't do that. But he didn't. He was exactly the way you remember him at his peak. If Reed holds together and gets back into that side...
Dennis, can I just interrupt you for 1 second? Which end did he play?
Centre halfback.
Right, perfect.
Centre halfback, and it was the old, long raking kicks, Terry, right across the ground, just pinpoint stuff. It was just the way you remembered Reed play at his peak. And he played about two quarters or so, and then they rested him. But the question I want to ask you boys is, you've seen Collingwood play now, not too bad. But put Reed back there at centre half back, and if that other young fellow, Greenwood, I think from North Melbourne, pulls his body together and plays also at the end of the year, where do you think Collingwood will go? Will they make the eight, and can they go further?
Well, certainly they've got the potential to make the eight. I don't think that there's any drama whatsoever with that. I think he's such an important player, Ben Reed, and I think everyone would hope that he just gets a little bit of luck with his body. I think it's the right end for him to play. I think if you start to get
down
a,
the back.
Yeah, I think if you start to get a structure of talls with Brown, Reed, and then Frost as your third intercept player, because he does come off his opponents so well, Frost. I really like the way that he'll back in his teammates. He's playing very similar to what Nick Maxwell used to play for the Magpies. So, like his work, so I think Reed back into that side. And Greenwood, look, Greenwood's going to be another tough, handy inside mid.
If they split their games from now, Dennis, they're just about going to make the finals. And I reckon they probably can. They've got Melbourne this week. They've got Darcy Moore coming through, who they're obviously looking at as their new key forward to help out Cloak. Now, he's not going to be a star this year, you wouldn't think, but he was playing very well before he broke down in the VFL, so, and he's getting close again now. So.
And there's a lot to like. I mean, I think it's been a little bit of a journey with this Collingwood side because, I mean, there's still, we speak about it time and time again, but there's still Schoenberg, Freeman, you know, guys that we haven't really been able to get to see yet. I thought De Goey was good when the game was on the line yesterday. Not that he had it a heap, but they trusted him and Nathan trusted him to go in on ball right into the guts of the action when the game was on the line. So I think he's going to be a fine player too.
Hungry for Sport with Kevin Bartlett for Aldi Penfold Burwood, celebrating 50 years of the Penfold family.
I want to win, okay? So the fans driving home listening now, I know we've got to win enough games to get in the finals and that's paramount. But I also think we have to protect the game.
I like that with Philip Walsh talking about protecting the game, and I know he's spoken about this before in terms of interchange and the number of interchange, and he can't recognise the game that he once loved as a kid and grew up. So I like Phil Walsh because we always have to protect the game.
He has to be drug tested.
It's important to protect the game. It's the game is the most important thing, not an individual, not a club, but protect the game. So
since when does a coach worry about it?
Well, he's saying he wants to protect the game.
Well, so good on him,
this weekend, do we get the chance this weekend to see Nat Fyfe then go up against Trent Cotchin? And we might see Juddy go up against Paddy Dangerfield. And well, that'd be great. No, it'd be fantastic.
I think what he said in the past, Philip Walsh, is that, I mean, obviously you coach within the rules of the game and what's available to you. So as long as interchange is available, you're going to coach in a certain way, and that may not be good for the game. But he has said in the past he doesn't believe that is good for the game. He likes to see some contests. He likes to see players getting fatigued and tired, things that I've spoken about. But at the moment, as a coach, he's not silly enough to say, well, I'm going to be a vigilante and just go out on, you know, some, you know, road by myself and knowing that under the rules, it's going to be my demise. So I've got to coach within the rules of the game that are put there for us. But I think what he's saying is if there was a change, he thinks it'd be better for the game.
Well, I was being a tad sarcastic because I would love it. I mean, you know, once upon a time we saw the best going up against the best. And to be having a look at that game, I was at the MCG Saturday night, but went home and had a look at that game afterwards. And to see those two stars of the game, 65% of their time on the ground, they actually played head-to-head against each other, and it was brilliant to watch.
So some of it would be, I presume, so it's Dangerfield goes to Fyfe, right, and Ross Lyon is happy with that to happen. But Nathan Fyfe's untaggable, isn't he? So if you try and put a defensive player on it, the guy's going to get, so it might be a Crowley or something like that if it's Fremantle. So he's not going to get many touches, and Fyfe will still get his 30, so You sort of weigh it up like that, don't you? And I've heard Phil Walsh speak about this, and he said that he doesn't like tagging as such. He prefers to call it a cooler, is the expression that he used, where if a guy's really running hot, okay, we'll put someone to him, try and slow him down. But that's the whole weighing up thing, KB, with tag. I mean, in the grand final, Sydney didn't tag Sam Mitchell, which is very unusual. Sammy Mitchell would normally draw a tag, and Mitchell cuts him to pieces.
Just a quick word before we go to our callers. You wrote the book, The Rise of the Swans. What did you make of the Adam Goods incident yourself, watching it and also after hearing the response?
Well, I went a little bit early on it because I put on Twitter straight away after it happened. I said, he'll get it. Please explain for that, which clearly hasn't happened.
I'm a big fan, he's been endorsed.
Yeah, that's right. Look, I'm a little bit with Lee Matthews on this. I didn't like the fact that it incited the crowd. I reckon if he, okay, he did that at the SCG on a Friday night with very few, a handful of cult supporters there. Obviously, he's said since that it's a war cry, so he has to do it to someone. But I would have liked him to have done it away from the crowd. I don't like crowd incitement. I think we've got a real delicate balance here. We've got a game where the supporters sit with each other. They don't have to be barricaded off like they do in English soccer or European soccer. If he did that at the MCG, KB, I'm all for him to celebrate his culture. I think it's great. And I'm a big fan of Adam Goods, and I like what he stands for generally. But I think that incited the crowd, and that's what I didn't like about it.
Okay, but it's been endorsed by the AFL. Now, yes. Therefore, and I asked Patrick Smith this, and we've got to get an answer from the AFL on this. Being endorsed by the AFL, are they happy for the AFL for, say, Adam Goods to do that every week if he wanted to? And how does that fall in line with other players in the past who might run up to the crowd and clap their hands in their face or, you know, say something to the crowd or make some demonstrative move to the crowd, which the AFL in the past hasn't liked at all?
Yeah, well, I can remember when I was coaching Nathan Brown, he gave the bird to the cheer squad of North Melbourne, and I think it was about a $10,000 fine back in those days. Now you can only get a $5,000 fine. But so there has been precedent in the past where people have been picked up for things.
Mm. So they've just got to explain what you can do and what you can't do. Jeff is in Frankston. Wants to talk about Adam Goods. G'day, Jeff.
Yeah, good day, guys. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, with Adam Goods, clearly premeditated, clearly proud and clearly to send a message, why would you not background the media, the football media, prior to it and say, look, if I kick a goal, this is what I'm going to do, this is what it's about, and then they can explain it, and then it can actually have a benefit and stop all this controversy?
I don't know whether you can say, look, when I kick a goal, or if I kick a goal, because if you don't kick a goal, you might look like a bit of a goose saying, I've gone to all this trouble to do this this war dance to kick a goal and then I don't kick a goal. It's like saying if I take the mark, best mark of the night, I'll take a screamer, I'm going to do something. But I don't know whether you can actually suggest in advance, Jeff, that you're going to kick a goal or take a mark.
You know, to Jeff, the explanation that Goodsy gave the day after was quite good. I think he probably should have spoken a bit more about it straight after the game, actually. That would have helped.
See, Jeff said was there to send a message. Adam Goods hasn't condone that. Anyone that said it was there to send a message, he said no, it wasn't there to send a message. It wasn't against Carlton fans. It wasn't against people booing him. It was just purely an Indigenous war dance.
Well, it came from the flying boomerangs.
And it was the theme, of course, was the Indigenous round, and it was something that he did for the kids in the under 16. So I know Jeff has said, as many people have, it was there to send a message. And I think Patrick thinks it was there to send a message as well. He said that this morning. But Adam Goods has denied that.
Mm. Well, I knew straight away what it was because I've seen the dance that the flying boomerang started and were a part of. But most people hadn't seen that. So they
hadn't seen it.
Yeah, they didn't understand
it. My first thought, Terry, was that someone had racially abused him or that someone was really getting stuck into him over the fence. That's what I originally thought, and I thought it was probably a reaction to that. Well, it turns out that there was a little bit of booing, but there was certainly no abuse over the fence.
Joe is in Coburg. G'day, Joe.
Hi, boys. If it wasn't meant to incite, why did he have a different dance for the other end and a different one for the Carlton end?
I think what he has said, Joe, is that one was a war dance to demonstrate against an opponent or an enemy, and the other one, which I haven't seen, was more of a inclusive dance because it was with supporters or followers. So there's obviously two dances. I don't know what the other one looks like.
He gets people talking, Goodsy, doesn't
he? I suppose the one thing going back to your point, Martin, is it okay for sort of dances, the tribal dances like the haka, is it okay to be confronting your opposition when you're playing them? But is it okay to confront people over the other side of the fence?
That's my whole point. I think the haka is fantastic. It makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck. But in the haka, it's clearly a theatrical thing taken from an ancient tribal
ritual,
and it's directed at your opponents who you're just about to play in a combative sport. So that's fine. I didn't like the crowd aspect of it.
Martin's always brought you by InSport Promotions. Now, they've got a new basketball backpack, which is available now. This is an absolute killer dilly. You've got to look at this. Choose the new custom basketball backpacks with ball compartment storage underneath or outer mesh compartment to store your ball. Now, not only do they carry basketballs, but they're also perfect for soccer balls, netballs and football. So all your sports are covered. So this is a fantastic backpack. Your choice of club colours and decorate it with your club logo or name. All you have to do is contact InSport Promotions on 8741 0000, or go to their website, www.insportpromotions.com.au, to view the new basketball backpacks. They are absolutely spectacular. InSport Promotions, your custom sports uniform and merchandise supplier. Give them a buzz, 8741 0000.
On 1116 SEN, Hungry for Sport with Kevin Bartlett for Penfold Holden, celebrating 50 years of the Penfold family.
Oh, listen, I still think we've got some areas that we can work with today. We probably at various stages a little bit too careful just going down the line when we tried to go against that, because Essendon were just marking everything inside at various stages. So we've got some work to do, like all those other sides around us as well, where the coaches are always looking for perfection, but unfortunately we never quite get it.
And of course, we did discuss what is the Richmond way of playing just recently, and does look like Damien Hardwick is suggesting, well, maybe playing ugly is the Richmond way of playing, because they're able to win that game by 13 points. It was a pretty ordinary game, the Dreamtime game. It wasn't something you'd get out the highlight reel and start watching again.
No, they've tightened up their defensive structures all the same, Richmond, over the last couple of weeks. They've been much, much better defensively. I know it wasn't a pretty game to watch, but I think if you're a Tiger supporter, you're just ticking them off at the moment.
And
very, very pleased with their victories. I think that they've been a lot more sound. Got a couple of questions surrounding the Bombers. And look, I know that they lost draft picks and they had to be a little bit more imaginative, but they've gone and got quite a few senior players who have been quite good for them over a period of time. But I've always had a belief, Martin, that there comes a time in your career where you want to get through games and you're a little bit more careful. We've seen some young guys this year, young Drummond, just throw himself back, just wanting to play AFL football, do anything. Isaac Heaney got hurt, did his knee, just throwing himself into packs. Young guys are inclined to do that. I think nearly everyone that's played the game has got to the stage at some stage where they are a little more careful and they are a little...
Are you naming names here?
Well, and they're a little bit more selective about when they go after that manic football. You have a look at the Essendon side at the moment, and where I'm naming names, it's just they're older blokes. You've got Job, who's a little bit sore at the moment at 30 years of age. You've got Goddard at 30 years of age. You've got Cooney nearly 30. You've got Fletcher at 40. You've got Chappie at 33. You've got Courtney Dempsey, 28, who's not old, but is playing older than his time at the moment. I just think that's a third of your team. I think they've got a team at the moment that are a little selective about when they really want to bash and crash. And I don't know whether you can play AFL football that way. To me, they've got to have a bit of a look at themselves. I mean, that's a leadership issue where they've got to have a look at themselves and sort of say, it's more important that we give everything to the Guernsey, and they've gone through enough, heaven forbid, as it's been, but I just think that there's something not 100% absolutely totally committed to each and every contest in that Essendon team at the moment.
Just in the last 2 weeks, Hurdy coaching on the boundary line.
Came, why was that?
And not necessarily wired up. I mean, he's got access to the
phone. Goes to the phone occasionally. Yeah,
but he sits there. Well, he clearly wants access to his players, direct access to his players. But it's a little bit unusual to do. Like most of the coaches that sit on the boundary be wired up all the time to their assistants. But, and he's obviously got Mark
Or come
Harvey
down for the
box.
Last 5 or 6 minutes or something like that.
Yeah. Look, I reckon they're underachieving a bit, Essendon. They lack forward punch, you know. And the week before, Joe Danaher kicked 6 and it...
Has the water appeal affected the players, do you think?
Well, the air does seem to have gone out of their tyres a little bit since the water appeal was announced. So, look, it's hard to read, but... Is it an excuse? I'm not sure.
Can you afford to have someone like Carlisle who can take terrific marks, but kicks with a bent leg, doesn't follow through with the ball, and misses easy goals? Now, I know there was one game last year, I think, when he played, he kicked 8 goals in against one of the weaker sides. I think it was at Etihad Stadium.
Had a breakout 2 weeks, didn't he?
Breakout 2 weeks. But is he a good enough kick to be a big danger to opposition with his kicking? I mean, Joe Danaher's still a young kid, and a few weeks ago, he kicked 6 or 7
it's
goals.
Definitely improving.
And his kicking does look like it's improved since last year. But, you know, with Carlisle, can you afford to have blokes playing on the forward line who just can't kick straight.
Well, with him, I heard James Hurd.
So does Hurley go back to forward line? Can he kick straighter than Carlisle?
He can kick straighter, but I don't know whether Carlisle competes in the manner in which Hurley competes as a defender either. I heard James Hurd speaking about this, Martin, after the game, and he sort of said that Danaher has put the time in over the summer where Carlisle was off the track for a lot of the summer and just hasn't put the amount of time into his kicking as what Danaher has.
Got to get it right.
Well, then. He needs to. He needs to put the time in. The other thing he needs to do is pull his head in every now and then as well, because there was 6 minutes to go in that game and he spent more time blueing with the umpires about decisions that weren't being paid. The ball's on its way back into the forward 50 and he's turning around the opposite direction and arguing with the umpires.
He's
just a little bit brash at times.
He's very aggressive, there's no doubt. He's got that in him, that real feistiness. 11 goals, 10 this year. Look, I think he's a terrific young player. I think he's going to be
great mark.
But he is a bit of a working
he's
progress.
He's a terrific young player who could be far, far better if he just pulls his head in a little bit.
Okay, Andrew joins us in Nidri. G'day, Andrew.
Oh, thank you for taking the call. Oh, I agree with everything's been said. I think it's now about time that James and his selection committee look at bringing in some of the younger players or players they've brought in to the club in the seconds.
Who have you got there, Andrew, that you think could come up?
Well, I'm a very big supporter of Nick O'Brien, and I think he was a very good player a couple of years ago. And for some reason, either for injury or lack of form or whatever, he dropped off the
radar
side, and he's playing really well in the reserves.
Andrew, how's Sean Edwards going down there?
Sean Edwards should be in the seniors. There's another one. He's been playing very well in the reserves, and I just think they need to get them in there and give them a chance to settle, because you've got players like Patrick Ambrose, Adam Cooney, and Paul Chapman, and him, Tom Bell Chambers, who have just really all treading water. They're not giving enough to the side week in, week out, and that's one of our biggest problems.
I always get amazed at giving away, you know, just such obvious free kicks. There was a boundary throw-in, and Bell Chambers just turned, and he just pushed Marriage out of the way, and then they paid a free kick, and I think Marriage got the free kick, and I think he handballed and went on, and Richmond got a goal. And I thought to myself, what in the world could actually make you all of a sudden decide I'm just going to turn around and push this bloke from a boundary throw-in? I mean, it was just a ridiculous free kick to give away. I mean, that's what drives coaches mad, because you think, you're just virtually presenting a goal to the opposition.
And just on Andrew's point, Richmond on the weekend had four players in their side that had all played their first game this year. Essendon, not the same. So I thought Richmond a few weeks ago threw a little bit of caution to the wind, changed up a few things.
Corey Ellis, Menadou, Liam McBean.
Absolutely. Mm. Started playing the three tools down the forward line. So they just tricked up a few things, changed a few things. Sometimes when it's not working for you and you're going with the same blokes, and you've got to put trust and faith in blokes, but all of a sudden if you're getting the same results and it's not working for you, I think Essendon are in that same position that Andrew just spoke about.
Well, they've got Geelong this week, and they're going to have to start winning at some point. They're just, they're struggling.
So is the Cats. They're struggling a bit too. Johnny's in Croydon. G'day, John. G'day, Johnny.
Oops, sorry, slip, boys. And you get a laugh.
I like audios. So I think they're very good, particularly if they're Richmond ones.
Yeah. Look, about Basher Hooley, I reckon he gets under the radar a bit, and he played as though his life depended on it. What do you think there?
He's had a very consistent year, Basher.
Absolutely. In the last quarter, when the game was up for grabs and Essendon kept coming forward, I thought that there was three times that Basher Hooley turned the ball back the other direction. There was that brilliant mark by Grimes as well. I thought that their defenders held up very, very well in that last quarter, but I'm agreeing with you. And it was Hooley playing against his old teammates. And I was speaking about a couple of the Essendon boys being selective. Certainly Basher Hooley wasn't being selective playing against his old teammates.
Johnny says, funny KB, commentators said that exact incident was a show of strength. Well, then they're being silly, those commentators. So I don't know who they were, but you can't push, block, bump or hold in a ruck contest the same as a marking contest. And at a boundary throw-in, to just turn around as the ball's being thrown in and you push the opposition ruckman out of the contest, that is just an absolute giveaway free kick. So it was just silly. Someone's saying it was Luke Darcy and Matthew Richardson. Well, they just got it wrong. If that's the case, you can't push, block, bump or hold in a ruck contest. And there's no point turning around and just going. It wasn't a subtle push, by the way. He just turned around and just went bang, pushed him out of the way. And then he looks at the umpires to say, what for? I mean, that's ridiculous.
Should be enforced too.
Don't forget, if you're looking for a garage door, there's only one place to go, and that's Eco Garage Doors. Now, they've got a special for the month of June because this special for the month of April and May has just gone gangbusters. Eco Garage Doors will donate $200, that's right, $200 from every insulated garage door sold to your nominated sporting club or charity. So we all have charity close to our hearts or a local sporting club, so it's your choice. So Eco will send $200 on your behalf. So you buy a garage door, and your local charity or sporting club picks up $200. So it's a good deed. So give Eco a call for a free quote on 9703 1500. That's 9703 1500. Or visit them online at www.ecogaragedoors.com.au to see their exclusive garage door profiles.
On 1116 SEN, Hungry for Sport with Kevin Bartlett for Penfold Holden, celebrating 50 years of the Penfold family.
So 11 minutes to midday. Coming off the message bank, was in the side, KB. A ball was being thrown in as part of the contest. No, that is incorrect. That's from Anonymous. That is incorrect. If two players are chasing after the ball bouncing along the ground, you are allowed to push the player in the side. But in a ruck contest, whether it's a boundary throw in or ball up, and in a marking contest, you are not allowed to unduly block, bump, hold, or push your opponent. So the fact is, he turned around, absolutely correct, and pushed him in the side out of the contest. That's a free kick because in a marking contest and a boundary contest, a ruck contest, you cannot do that. So the ruckman's got to know that, and commentators have got to know that rule as well. You cannot push, block, bump or hold in a ruck contest. So he just gave away a stupid, silly free kick. And I'm glad Anonymous sent that through because if the fans think you can get away with it, well, you can't. That's not in the rule book. You can't do it.
Here's one for you, KB. The Brownlow medal record number of votes is 34. If you discount those couple of years where we had two umpires voting,
yeah,
where I think the winner was about 60. Dane Swan in 2011 got 34, which is the highest, you know, in a one-umpire system. Could Fife break that?
Absolutely could.
He's in the Herald Sun, for instance, which has the same voting system. He's 21 already. He leads by 7. He leads the Age Award, which has a different voting system, by 25. And he leads the Coaches Association, which the votes come out today, by 22 votes. Mm. He's got 68 votes. He could get, if he keeps going, he could
so
get,
you're saying that,
he could get 38
are you
or 40
saying
votes or something.
In every game this year, has either been the best or the second best player on the ground?
No, not necessarily. But what have we had? We had 9 games. I reckon he's probably had, what have we had? He might have 7 threes.
I think he's potentially has the ability to vote in every game. Now, vote him, and he may not get a vote in one of the games, but I think he's been good enough in each of those games that we've played to be discussed in consideration for votes.
I'd love to see him win one because, you know, last year he was pretty close and he is the best player in the game at the moment by a good bit, probably.
Well, I think in the 20-25-year history of the game, there's only been one other player that's led contested football and contested marking, and that was Anthony Koutafidis.
Yeah.
So that's not a bad stat.
Didn't win the Brownlow.
He didn't win the Brownlow.
Yeah, one of the funniest stats I reckon in AFL football is that Bob Pratt kicked 150 goals for South Melbourne, never won his club best and fairest that year. And Peter Hudson kicked 150 goals for Hawthorn and never won the best and fairest in that year.
Must have been some good other players, KB.
Well, they did say to Bob Pratt, because I did ask the great late Bob Pratt about this in an interview many years ago. He himself fronted the committee because he wanted an explanation, because obviously he got faded by kicking 150 goals. And they said he didn't play consistent enough.
Consistently better than any other full forward ever.
He wasn't consistent. And you have a look at what he kicked that year. I think it was only 18 games in a season. I think there was a couple of finals. So he's kicking
average
10s,
12s,
7s, 6s, 8s, 9s.
Well, Martin, we've had a couple of sides that have been consistent with their effort. And there are a couple of the young sides in the competition who I've just really enjoyed watching them play. The Bulldogs the other day, I think most people expected GWS to beat them.
On the back of their performance against Adelaide.
What a turnaround they've had and a magnificent performance, and how good do they play at Etihad Stadium. And then the Mighty Saints coming from behind.
Twice now they've come from behind.
Yeah, ten goals against the Bulldogs, and then big turnaround again yesterday. They're really enjoyable and refreshing to watch those two sides.
Both good game styles. So the Bulldogs turn up to that game and Jake Stringer pulls out. Cramery's already out of the side, so they've got no forward line. So they brought Minson in after being in the seconds for 7 or 8 weeks. They put Minson takes the centre bounces against
Mumford.
Because they couldn't have Ace Cordy in there. So Minson goes there, then he drifts forward and plays as a key forward. Jordan Ruffhead comes out of the square and comes and runs around the ground in the mark. I said it was like a Mark Blixab style of ruckman. You know, he just jumped and competed.
They would love to play Ruffhead as their ruckman at some stage. I think that they'll do everything in their powers over the trade period to find another key defender, so that they have the ability, more flexibility with Ruffhead in his role.
Well, they dropped Michael Taylor, which was surprising. But anyway, I think that it was interesting. I think that Luke Beveridge has been a revelation.
Been fantastic, hasn't he?
The way that he set up that game was fantastic. I mean, they had a lot of negatives there, and they turned it into a positive.
Midfielders were brilliant.
Wallace.
The GWS midfielders didn't touch it. Wallace had 12 possessions in the first quarter, gave away a goal and kicked a goal himself. So he was involved in 2 goals plus 12 possessions in the first quarter. Has Dalhouse and Pickin...
Dalhouse has been outstanding. Oh,
well, Pickin as well. I mean, it's the best football. He seems like he's been released just to go and play his footy, and he seems to be really enjoying it. Those two, they're only both small players, but they've been outstanding. The role of Boyd as a halfback has worked brilliantly for them, and he's playing excellent football. Clearly, they're being well organised by their coach and their captain. They're well led on the field. They've been great to watch. But the Saints... The Saints are doing a really good job as well.
Even against Sandlands, when they nearly upset Fremantle, they decided
not to have a ruckman.
Not to have a ruckman because Sandlands was going to win the tap out anyway.
Well, again, Luke Beveridge is trying a few things, and he's got Easton Wood back there as one of the most improved players
in
the club. 7 intercept marks, Kobe. That's one of the big stats now, intercept marks. And he just picked the ball off, you know, he just turned it around, go, and he just takes off straight away because he's quick. I used to think that he was an athlete more than a footballer, but he's become a real footballer.
We'll take a break. When we come back, Will will join us from Pakenham. Terry Wallace has joined us, always brought to you by Ico Garage Tours and Martin Blake, all thanks to InSport Promotions.
On 11.16 SEN, Hungry for Sport with Kevin Bartlett for Penfold Mazda, celebrating 50 years of the Penfold family.
Will joins us in Pakenham. G'day, Will.
G'day, guys. How are you today?
You want to talk about the Tigers' game plan against the Bombers?
Yes, I do. I watched the game with a couple of mates, and like, to be honest, I thought that was a lot of people have said it was a pretty terrible game, but I think Richmond openly went out to play that way. It was shown a couple of times when Essendon got the ball in the open, Collier just tore us apart, as well as a fair few other of their players, but when we kept control, slowed the game down, I think it works straight to our favour.
Spot on, Will. And they've done it for the last couple of weeks, and I think it's the tightest they've been defensively almost since Damien's time at the footy club. They're playing some really good defensive footy.
Playing ugly.
Now what we want is... Yeah, well, but now the balance is, can you add a little bit more offensive flavour to what they're doing defensively? You don't want to lose any of the defensive stuff, but just if you could add a little bit more offence to it, you've got a perfect balance.
Just on Bob Pratt in 1934, he played 21 games, kicked 150 goals. Terry Brain won the South Melbourne Best and Fairest that year, played 18 games and kicked 33 goals that year. Bob not consistent enough. And Peter Hudson in 1971 played 24 games, kicked 150 goals. Lee Matthews won his first Best and Fairest that year, played 23 games and kicked 43 goals and knocked off the great Peter Hudson, who booted 150 big ones.
Well, history will tell you the other two boys probably had better years.
Don't forget Eco Garage Doors. Always give them a call on 9703 1500 for their exclusive garage door profiles and that $200 to your charity and, of course, also to your football club. And don't forget also InSport Promotions. They've got these fantastic new basketball packs. Just go to InSport Promotions, 8741 0000. See you later, boys.
See you, boys.
Daniel's on his way.
Thanks.